Welcome to the You Lead Podcast, equipping you to lead.
Hi, and thanks for joining us for another installment of the You Lead Personal Leadership Podcast. I'm excited that you joined us. Today, Matt McKee will be interviewing Chris Lemma. Chris is Vice President of Software Engineering at Emphasis Software, and they will be discussing the topic of replacing yourself. Let's listen in.
Hello, and welcome to another installment of the You Lead Personal Leadership Podcast. Today, I am very glad to have Chris Lemma on the phone with me. And Chris, if you don't mind, would you just go ahead and introduce yourself to the people who are listening in?
Sure. All right. Well, I'm the Vice President of Software Engineering and Marketing at a company called Emphasis Software, and it's rare to find someone in charge of both software and marketing. It just means I get to talk to myself and fight with myself a lot. I have also been a campus pastor with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, a junior high and senior high pastor, a associate pastor, and a teaching pastor and a children's church director in the church world, all of those in volunteer capacities, because for the last 18 years, while I've worked with about six different church plants, helping them grow, I've also been in the software world as a serial entrepreneur helping startups grow. So there's a lot of fun stuff to do there that crosses back and forth between building a church and helping church planners, as well as building a software organization and launching it and then seeing it kind of move forward. So I've taken my pay from the corporate world and then given my time to the church world.
Well, Chris, you know, I think it's very important to have you on the phone today. One, because I've known you for a little over a year. We've worked on quite a few different projects together already. And the one thing that you keep emphasizing to me is the importance of letting myself lead in the areas I'm gifted and letting others lead in the areas that they're gifted. And it really boils down to a mentality that says I should be replacing myself in areas that I'm not strong and really playing to my strengths. And I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about that today, about how we can have a replace ourselves mentality and how we do that.
Sure. So before I jump into answering that directly, I'll give you a couple mental pictures that I work with often, at least two mental pictures that are important to me. Both were shared with me, one in college and then one after college, so a while ago, but both have been particularly helpful in terms of this concept of leading in your strengths. And the first was when I was in college, as many college people do, you get to the point where you're poor and you have to get your hair cut anyway, and so you buy those clippers at the local store and you start cutting each other's hair. And of course, the easiest haircut is to put, you know, some sort of clipper guard on, and then you just take all the hair off and you just leave an inch or two around. It's a buzz cut. It's really easy. And what you discover is some people look really great with a buzz cut and other people look horrible. And so I had this friend of mine who had cut hair for a couple of years look at me and say, the trick isn't to do one haircut well. The trick is to find the haircut that works best on a person. And that image of multiple different kinds of hairstyles, haircuts for different people, was critical. And it stuck then and it stayed with me all the way through. The second image or visual picture was shared with me by someone who meant to pay me a compliment. Initially, I was quite offended, but they said, you know, you play human chefs really well. And I was like, well, hold on a second, you know, because it sounds like you're saying something really rude, like I treat people like pawns or whatever. And so I had clearly a look on my face. And he said, no, I mean that in the best possible way, but it seems like you really understand that different people are different, just like chess pieces are different, and you figure out how to use each one and leverage each one with their particular skill sets in the right way, just like chess pieces have different ways to move, And when you do that, man, when you pull it all together, it seems like you win all the time. And so the chessboard is another very positive, strong image of how to think about different people with different skill sets and still having one key objective, say, you know, if you're playing chess, to win, but to leverage multiple different talents and the way different people maneuver and work and interact to get the best out of it, right? So when you start thinking about, or when I start thinking about replacing myself isn't the goal, right? What's the goal is to make sure that every person I'm leading, that I have figured out what it is they do best, that I have helped them figure out for themselves and see that, help them see it for themselves, what they do best, and then help create opportunities for them to do that. Now, the reason I don't try and replace myself directly, like let's try and find another Chris and then let that Chris be in this role so that I can leave, is if we jump from these mental pictures over to quantum physics for a second, Newtonian physics is a thing that all organizations are built around, right? Newtonian physics is this concept that says we break things up into smaller and smaller subparts, right? And so when we go to build something, we build it up from building blocks and we build up. And Newtonian physics is very predictable. It's very easy. And so we can kind of think, oh, well, in a Newtonian physics world, I can literally take the top block out, put another block there, and we'll be done. Quantum physics highlighted to us when we shifted from Newtonian to quantum physics, we discovered some many different things. But probably the biggest truth we learned was that observation of something changes the nature of the thing that's being observed. Right? Now, that's a scientific principle. In quantum physics, we can't predict or measure something without affecting it. The scientist who monitors is affecting what he's monitoring. In leadership and in management, the same thing is true. When I lead people, their reaction to me is fundamentally because I'm me. And when I leave the situation, the culture that I've developed is going to change because I will no longer be there. So I can't just find the next Chris, put Chris, you know, that next Chris into that place and hope the culture and the organization will work the exact same way. I can't do it. What I can do, however, is make sure that each person knows what they're good at. Make sure that I've created opportunities for the rest of the organization to understand what they're good at. And make sure that as I depart, I've developed in enough people enough strength and enough opportunities to develop that strength that someone can then step up into that place and run the organization from there. And so the resultant organization will not be the same one that I had, right? But it will be led, and it will be led well by someone who fully understands not only what they do well, but the people around them and how to use them well, how to leverage their talents, and how to make sure that there's a humility that comes with it that says, I don't have to do everything well. I don't have to know everything. That's why I work in the context of an entire team. Does that make sense, Matt?
It does, and I think it brings me to a question of, then why do people hold so tightly onto information or things that they're not good at? Because I see too many times where people feel like if they're not in charge of something, then they're going to lose something, and I don't get that. So where does that mentality come from?
Well, it's that, as I was referencing, in that kind of Newtonian world, which is permeated, even though that's a scientific concept, it's permeated the way we've thought through just about everything, from the way we think about planning and schedules to problem solving. We just think, let's just break it down into its little parts. And so we think once I've found my little area that I'm in charge of, I don't ever want to give it up. That's where I assume my power. Now, there's an interesting thing when you think about Newtonian physics versus quantum physics. Quantum physics is very weird. It's funky. In fact, there are people who have said, I mean, real hardcore scientists that discovered quantum physics, who will tell you that fundamentally they hated it because it was unpredictable. They hated it because it didn't make any sense, and they wish they'd never been part of it. The guy who came up with this kind of idea, Schrodinger's cat, that guy himself said, I wish I'd never been a part of this at all, right? Because it's very funky. But one of the interesting funkiness things about it was this concept that when two things were separated really far apart, time and distance and space, and one was spinning left, the other one was always spinning right. and one was spinning up, the other one was spinning down. And they're like, how can these things be interacting with each other or having consequence on each other when they're so far removed? The reality in quantum physics is that we really don't understand how it works, but we know that one really hardcore, deep principle, a part of all of it, is the notion of relationship, right? And when we are living in that Newtonian world, right, when we're living in that notion that we're disconnected, we're our own thing, we have our own little fiefdoms or kingdoms, and we're in charge, we fundamentally misunderstand the nature of relationship and how important relationships are and how valuable they are and the reality that they're there even if we think they're not. And so when people are trying to build themselves up and build up their own stuff, they're looking for power in a way that's driven from the, you know, I'm in charge and I don't want to give up anything. And because my power comes from that, I can also never admit that I don't know something. Whereas when we move away from the power paradigm and move towards an influence paradigm, we don't have to have the same authority. We don't have to be in charge of anything. In fact, in most organizations, when I step into them, I'm given some amount of power by a role. But more often than not, most of my authority, natural authority in an organization, doesn't come from my title or my role. It comes from influence. And that influence comes from developing a relationship. So I'm very free to say I have no clue what that is. I'm very free to say I don't know what that is. And I don't have that answer. I'm also very free to highlight that if one of my staff is smarter than me in some area, to say, hey, you should talk to this guy because he's really good at that, and to create those opportunities for them to shine and excel, because I know what I'm really doing is building out a set of relationships. And when I have those relationships, I have influence. And when I have influence, ultimately the thing I want, which is to have impact, happens. When you're building from just a power base that's really, you know, focused and tight, and you're unwilling to articulate what you don't know, and you're hiding even the success that's coming from beneath you simply as just yours, it's really rigid. And that rigidity will ultimately be its own downfall, right? I mean, it will break. Too often you see it in an organization where you take out the head and the entire rest of it gets tossed with it because you're like, forget it. Let's just start differently and do something else. In most organizations where I work, whether you know, in the church world or in the business world, I want to make sure if I step away, there's still vitality left there. There's something valuable that's still there. And so the trick is just focus on the relationships and have my own folks focus on relationships. In my software world, we have a bunch of engineers, and a big part of what we do is help them is develop opportunities for them to develop relationships outside of their own organization so that other people can say, hey, that guy's really great at that, or that person's really helpful at that. So that even if I were to disappear at some point, the overall relational dynamic will sustain itself and help those people and help that organization move forward.
Okay, so we have a lot of preschool children, youth pastors, and even senior pastors and executive pastors and other leaders listening to this. So basically what I'm hearing you say is no matter what my position is, no matter where I feel like I am in the organization, that what I should focus on is my strengths and that relationship that I have with the other people in my organization and the strengths that they have. Is that correct?
Almost. That's almost perfect. I'd say that's the entire second tier of things you should be focused on. The most important thing you should be focused on, right, above what you do well, right, above your own personal inventory, is to start by knowing and learning what your people do well, right? So, yes, there are things that you personally, that an executive pastor or a and some people will think that my answer now is only applying to, say, an executive pastor or a senior pastor or a director of someone who has a bunch of staff. The truth is this has nothing to do with whether you have anyone reporting to you. The truth is that you will have the most impact in an organization, and you will be considered someone who brings value to the table most when you can figure out around you who is good at what and how to leverage it. And even if it's something that's assigned to you, right, even if it's something that you are totally in control of and you can say, that's mine and I'm going to do it, if there is someone that you can say, this is something you do really well, and I've noticed it. First of all, just by telling someone what they've done well and how you've noticed it, you will develop a different kind of relationship. But if you can do that, if you can say, I've been watching and I've noticed that you're really good with people, particularly special needs children, where most people get exasperated, you have an extra amount of patience. And so therefore, in talking with this parent, even though I'm responsible and in charge, I would like to have you come with me. I'd like you to participate in this because I value your insights. Your default is probably better than my default in this place, and I'd like to have you come along. The more I do that, right, and the more that people do that, even if it's not someone that reports to them, right, even if you're not in a leadership role, the very nature of being able to find talent and observe strength and leverage it makes you something unique and valuable to an organization, makes you someone who people say, hey, I love working with that person, right? So over the course of years, I've had some staff that every time I've gone to the next business, they've wanted to come along, right? I have probably, especially at Emphasis, but even in the last few companies, especially when you're getting to organizations of 2,000, 3,000, I've had the lowest attrition rate among staff across all of the staff, all the directors, anyone who's a manager. And that's mostly because people want to hang around. They want to stay. They want to work in my group. That's not because of me, right? In fact, it really has nothing to do with me. It has to do with they just know they're going to get the best showing there, right? I'm going to find the right position, the right job, the right opportunities, and throw it at them. They know I'm not going to hold it for myself. I'm going to give it to them. And so if you're talking about what are the top two things they need to come away with, yeah, for the folks listening, the number two thing is find out what you're good at. Focus on that. And figure out how to pass the things on that you're not good at to others around you so that they can excel that way. But the first thing, the more important thing is be a keen observer of people. Be a keen observer of people watching and observing what they're good at and being able to articulate it back to them, making that observation, and then creating opportunities for them to do that. Whether or not you manage people, if you're doing that first piece, you'll have more than enough time then to get to the second piece and then develop your own personal strength. Does that make sense, Matt?
It does, and I think that is unbelievable advice. No matter where we feel like we are in a structure, in an organization, whether we're in a church or in a business, I think all of that truly applies because we're all leaders in some sort of fashion, whether it's just to volunteers or it's just to other staff or it's just to whatever. We can say it's just, but it's still leadership, and that leadership is really should be focused on others first, us second, and then the final, really, the goal of everything would be seeing, you know, the goals and objectives seen through because of the people that God has put around us.
I hope that you've been challenged by the conversation between Chris and Matt. We would love to hear your thoughts and opinions on orangeleaders.com. Any insights that you have that we can collaborate around will only make us better. Until next time, keep thinking orange.
Presented by ULead.com, a product of the Orange Strategy. Find out more at whatisorange.org.